Okay, so this was a shirt that I was originally given on Tuesday as a mini shirt quali. Then I think Rishmuel David gave. But it's a short shir that explains a lot that goes on in the seventh parak of Sota, in terms of the nature of language. So hey Rami, now I see you. Okay, so the seventh parak of Sota is about, in the end of the day, the question of language, which mitzvot can be performed in can be recited, which verbal mitzvot can be recited in any language, and which can only be recited in Lashon HaKodesh. And as we'll see, this question seems to cut to the heart of what the nature of language is in different contexts, and how that manifests itself in different mitzvot. So before we look at the sources, so if I asked you, if you had to guess whether verbal rituals had to be performed specifically in Lashon HaKodesh or not, what would you say? Why would it depend on the circumstances? If so, explain. All right, let's do a little a priori work here before we see sources. Okay, I see Rami and Adam. Go, Rami. Unmute yourself so that I can hear you, otherwise that'll be pointless. Yes.
The recognized supreme language. So I would assume in all official documents, they would generally need to be made in and particularly like ritual events that only take place in Hebrew. But for more casual interactions,
Okay. Okay. So Rami's first suggestion is it depends on whether this is a formal ritual, in which case Rami claims that when it comes to formal ritual, you should use Lashon HaKodesh. Now, Rami's argument for that is a pragmatic political one, right? Which is not that, Hebrew is the only language, right, halachically, but that we want to give it its priority, right? So when you have a national language, so you have to sometimes require that certain things be done in the national language because that's what gives it its significance. But in certain things where, how did you formulate it, Rami? If it's just an agreement between people, so then you don't need to. And Rami's argument seems to be that if it's not national in nature, so then you don't have that pragmatic concern. Okay, that's a pragmatic distinction between them. Okay, fine. Still, maybe only the preference, fine. But, okay, Adam and Ezra. Ezra, I see both your hands up. Your physical hand up and your virtual. Yes, Adam, go.
I would say it's a matter of the purpose of the mitzvah. Not the purpose, but, like, the purpose.
Okay, good. So clarifying, what sense?
Is it about the what?
Is it about what, yeah. Okay, so Adam wants to make a different distinction, and that is in the case where the words are intrinsically valuable. Now, Adam hasn't explained why they might be intrinsically valuable, but in a case where they are, right, let me just state your claim, and then maybe I'll push you one step, and then we'll take Ezra. When the words are intrinsically valuable, you have to say them in the original. But when the message is what's important, the words are just a means by which we communicate the message, so then it doesn't matter what language it is. Okay, let me push you. Adam, that's a very good distinction, but let me push you half a step farther. Why would certain words matter and certain words not matter? What would be rule of thumb to figure out what types of cases the words matter and when they don't. What do you think? I agree with you. That's a good distinction. When words matter, then you have to say in the original. But what do you have a predictive rule for that?
The only thing that comes to mind is if it would be impossible to convey the message with using translation.
Okay. So Adam now suggests a technical. Adam says, look, really all we care about is the message. But there are certain types of things that it's easier to get the point across. And therefore, we can do it in any language. And certain things where the precision of what we need to get across is so difficult to attain that we have to do it in the original, because the chance that we'll capture the proper meaning is, without the actual words, is very unlikely, right? The way that... Now, that's an interesting distinction, right? That's like, you find this sometimes in poetry, right? Adam, right? You see this sometimes in poetry or song, right? Where translating prose is hard, but not impossible. But translating songs are often impossible, just because part of what's being transmitted isn't just the meaning, but it's the style. And that, to get the meaning and the style, is very hard. Right? So you do have practical cases like that. Okay. Ezra.
So I would say, like, the rule of thumb for differentiating is things that, like, it's like the Pesukim, like it's in the Pesukim, like in the Torah it says say X, Y, and Z. That means say X, Y, and Z.
Okay. So you give a, right, so Ezra's going to give a Pesukim base, which is if the Torah says say X, then it means say X literally, like say these words. But when the Torah says something else, what's that other thing?
Well, I mean, like with a neder, it doesn't, like, it doesn't, like, there's, like, there's not a specific...
Good.
You have to
good. So when the Torah outlines a formula, so it assumes that that's literally what you're going to say. And in other cases where the Torah outlines communication that might happen and its implications, so communication can happen in any language or something like that. Now... Good. Now, does that reflect something? Meaning, saying that it depends on how it presents in the Torah, that's definitely fair. But does that reflect anything? Meaning, does the choice of the Torah to make certain things be identifiable formulas and other things not, does that reveal something about the nature of those laws?
Magic words.
Okay, so you just say magic words. Okay. Let's see what that might mean. Okay, so we have a good... Yeah, you want to explain what you mean by magic words?
Like, instead of, like, saying the 13, we go to Brooklyn, I say, God, merciful. Like, those, like, the whole thing with that is those are magical words. Like, if you use those magical words, God will... And you're, like, doing tshuva, then God will forgive you.
Okay,
so,
right, so...
Like, translations, then magic doesn't work.
Okay, right. So Ezra's right says, well, maybe certain things are like magic. Okay, maybe we can come up with a more precise formulation, but there's definitely something there. So let's try to see what we get here in the Gemara. So, or the Mishnah. So the Mishnah tells you that Elu ne'emarim b'chol lashon. These are the types of mitzvot that can be said in any language. Parshat Sota. Vidui ma'aser, kriyat shema, tefila, birkat hamazon, shuvat ha'edut, shuvat ha'pikadon. So the things that can be said in any language are the psukim of the sota, where we tell the sota what's going to happen to her if in fact she committed adultery. Vidui ma'aser, which is at the end of every 3 years when you have to clear out any ma'aser that you didn't give, so then you say vidui ma'aser, you get rid of the ma'aser, and then you have a text where you say, I did everything I was supposed to. Shema and Shmona Esrei can both be said in any language. Benching. And then vows that you make. Shuara Edut is where I adjure you. I say, I know that you know information that would help me in court. You say, no, I don't. And I make you swear that you don't know information. I can do that. And Shuara Pikadon is when... I appoint you a guardian over my property, and you have to promise that you didn't misuse it, and the like. Yes, Ezra.
Like, with the exception of Shema, like, all of these are things where if we're going off, like, the whole, like, there's going to be a little bit of meaning loss, there's going to be a lot of meaning loss in termination, there is no, well, with the exception of Shema, with all these things, there is no, like, original text. It's not a specific type of thing, like sentence or whatever paragraph that you need to say, so there's no meaning that's going to be lost.
Okay, right, so Ezra already notes that from what we have so far, you could just say, look, everything here doesn't have a biblical text, which is not true of Vidui Maaser, right, or Parshat Sota.
I didn't know that.
So this is when you might want to look at a Chumash, but both Parshat Sota, both Parshat Sota and Vidui Maaser have an actual text, right? Vidui Maaser starts off, Bi'arti Akodesh Min Habayit, I got rid of the holy things from my house. And then it goes on. Right? It's a whole list. And in Sota, also, there's a formal text. So we'll have to find the distinction somewhere else. That's the list of things that have to be Lashon HaKodesh. What about the things that don't have to be Lashon HaKodesh? What about the things that do? So the Mishnah says, these are the things that can only be said in Lashon HaKodesh. Mikra Bikurim. So when you bring Bikurim, you have a psukim and you say Va'anita Va'amarta, right? You know this from, when do we say Mikra Bikurim every year? Please know this. At the Seder. It is the basis of the Haggadah, Arami, Oved, Avi, Vayerid, Mitzrayim, Rabbi, Metei, Me'at. You know that thing, the whole Haggadah, second half of the Haggadah, the most important part of the Haggadah, that's Mikra Bikurim. That's what it is, those Psukim.
Robert Shmuel thing, or whatever.
Not the first half, the second half. But the Psukim of Arami, Oved, Avi, and on, I mean, yes, it is contingent on that, but yes. Arami Oved Avi, those psukim, that is Mikra Bikurim. Chalitza, that's when someone dies without a son. His brother can either perform Yibum, right, the levirate marriage, or the divorce, which is Chalitza, where the woman takes off the shoe, spits at him, and says a certain few psukim, kacha yes ela ish. This is what happens to a person who doesn't want to build his brother's house. Yes, Eli.
I guess we'll wait, but the next one is Birkat Klalot, which doesn't really seem to make sense considering that's like one instance in Tanakh.
Correct. Brachot and Klalot is one instance in Tanakh. That is the Brachot and Klalot on Har Grizim and Har Eval.
Right.
Let's get down what they are. Birkat Kohanim, Birkat Kohen Gadol, right? So the daily Bracha of the Kohanim, the Kohen Gadol's Bracha on Yom Kippur, Uparshat HaMelech, and the, right, which is Hakel, right, every 7 years, when the king will read the Torah in the Beit HaMikdash, in the, on Sukkot following Shemitah, Uparshat Egla Arufa, right, in the case of the Egla Arufa, where the person is, right, where you find a body, and the judges have to say, we didn't spill this blood. U'mashuach melchama b'shah shemidaber el ha'am. And the mashuach melchama, the Kohen is appointed by war to tell the message of when they can return from war to the people. Okay, good. So here's the distinctions between the Mishnah. So based on this distinction in the Mishnah, let's try to sharpen our formulations. Okay? So we had three formulations. I'll start with Adam. Adam, you wanted to raise a practical distinction between them. Cases in which it's easy to translate and cases in which it's not easy to translate. What do you think? Does that bear out for everything in the Mishnah?
Well, what do you mean?
Do you think that all the things you're allowed to say not in Hebrew are easy to translate, and all the things you have to say in Hebrew are hard to translate? What do you say?
I would say, well, the thing is, it depends on the language.
So I don't know. I Egla Rupa is like two psukim, right? It's, we didn't spill this blood. That, I would have said, is pretty easy to translate. As opposed to Shema, I don't know. Shema is a little bit harder to capture every, you know.
You can say that Shema, you can say it. Did we say you could say Shema in any language?
Yeah, Shema can mean any language.
Yeah, but that seems pretty hard to translate.
That's why I'm asking. Do you think it bears out? Where, you know, I think that some of the things in list one, which are allowed to say in other languages, are harder to translate than the things in list two. Right? I think. Egla Rufa is just the psukim that say, our hands didn't spill this blood.
I'm saying, does that have to be said in Hebrew or any language?
Hebrew. That's what I'm saying. I think some of the things in list one are harder than things in list two. So, you know, for me, the practical distinction seems hard. The practical distinction is really important, but I'm not sure it's enough to explain the difference between list one and list two. Yes, Ellie.
Wait, this is something Andrew was discussing with me, that if you were to say that the reason why we have to say certain things solely in Hebrew is because we have to quote a direct pasuk, then wouldn't Birkat Kohen HaGadol be an exception to that, in that the Kohen HaGadol is actually able to paraphrase as long as he gets the main conceptual theme of the brachot he's saying?
I mean, he had certain brachot that he actually says, right, as it says later on in the Mishnah here. Right, it's not all psukim, but it is, yeah, I mean, right, so it doesn't seem to be that, right, because it's not necessarily, it's not a quote from a pasuk. That's correct. The brachot and the klalot are, but not everything here is. You're right. Okay, so what about Rami's distinction? The practical value of maintaining Hebrew as the national language. Okay, Rami says, it worked a priori, but it doesn't work in the Mishnah. Okay, Rami throws it out. Okay, so Ezra, what about your distinction? Magic words versus non-magic words. So what do you think, Ezra? Magic words versus not magic words? Okay, he disappeared on me. Okay. This is the problem with the Zoom. Fine.
Magic words.
Okay, so let's try that one, which we haven't yet thrown out. So let's try it. So, is there reason to believe that the second list here are the type of thing that require magic words in a way that the first half doesn't? So, I think maybe, though I don't know if I would use magic words, but let's try a different formulation. Let's try to distinguish between ritual and communication. Right? Let's try this distinction. Right? By ritual, I don't mean mitzvah. Right? Because you can have mitzvot that are not really rituals. What's the difference between a ritual and something which is more, not ritualistic, but communicative? So let's think about this, right? When you have something which is ritualized, like think about the swearing-in ceremony of a politician, of the president, right, which will not be so long off. Right? That has formal significance, right? You do this, and there's a specific language you need to say because you're not just trying to convey information, you're performing a ritual act, a transformative formal process. When it comes to ritual, we are very uptight about ritual. Right, what makes them ritual is that they are ritualized, right? Meaning the what that word means is that we've made it formal, right? We have frozen it in such a way that it's not quite magic, but it's almost magic, as it would have it, right? Like, and I think if you look at it, there's good reason to believe that this is the difference. that the things that have to be said in Hebrew are formalized because they're rituals. As opposed to the ones at the beginning, where even though they're mitzvot, they are communicative. So let's take the easy ones, okay? I think we can all agree that Shvuat Ha'edut and Shvuat HaPikadon, that making a promise is fundamentally not ritualistic. It's communicative, right? Someone asks me and says, do you have information for me that would help me in court? And I say, no, right? And the person says, I don't believe you. Promise me that you don't have information for me. Right? That is fundamentally communicative, right? It's not a ritual. I'm trying to find out whether or not you have information for me, right? That seems obvious that it is communicative. What about Birkat Kohanim? What would you say? Does Birkat Kohanim have the feel of something which is communicative or ritualistic?
It's about as ritualistic as
yourself. Good. Why is it as ritualistic as possible? Give me a good reason.
The fact you can't say.
Tell me better. Why is it, what do you mean the magic hands? Why is it magic? Why is Birkat Kohanim magical?
It's also that it's like a bunch of people doing it at once, so if you have them all say whatever word they felt like, it can really work.
Oh, Ezra, you were on a formal level, now you're going back to practical, but let me keep you on it. Why is Birkat Kohanim magical? Ritualistic, but what you called magical.
Because they're passing God's blessing.
Very good, because they're not giving you their own blessing. If they were giving you their own blessing, so then it might be communicative. But they're not. What does the pasuk say afterwards? If they say these words, "Va'ani avarechem," God will bless. Meaning the Kohanim are merely conveying God's blessing. So they don't. It's not that they need to understand it. They're not telling you what they want for you. They're passing on God's blessing. That's about as ritualistic and magical as you could possibly get. Right, it's magical because God is doing it. They're just God's conduit. What about the brachot and klalot? What do you think? Is that ritualized? I'd say that's also about as ritualized as you can possibly get, right? You take six tribes and put them on one mountain, six tribes on the other mountain, the Kohanim and Levim and the Aron standing in the middle, turning from one mountain to the other. It's a show. Right, this is a show. It's about the grandeur of this. It's meant to, right, this is not just getting a message across. There's an experience here. An experience, often what makes it intimidating is that it is formal ritual, right? Same with Hakel, right? Hakel isn't just learning the Torah. It's once every 7 years the king gets up there and reads the Torah in the Beit HaMikdash, when all of Klal Yisrael is there. You can see why that might require ritual, right? If you know anything about the British monarchy, right? Everything is ritual, right? Which crown you use, who you bow to, and what, right? In what order, right? You first bow or curtsy to the sovereign, and then you gotta you gotta figure out who's ranked and. Ritual matters in cases like that. Chalitza also, you could argue, right, is ritualized, right? It's not just, it seems pretty magical, right? Well, I don't even know what's going on. The problem is this is the coldest room in the house. Anyways, chalitza, the magic marriage was automatic, right? The brother died, and now the brother is automatically married to the ex-wife. And to end the marriage, you need to take off their shoe and spit at their feet, right? And say these words, right? It feels ritualized, right? That's what it feels like. And to be fair, if you ever see a chalitza, which I hope you never do, from what I've heard from people at the Beis Din, they actually give you a script, right? They're like stage directions, and they say, this is what you do, right? Say step one, step two, this is how you talk, right? It's, It's very, very formal. Yeah, Adam.
of a Felisa that happened last year, I think, in Iran, where and the rabbi said one word and then, like, if the woman just repeated word after word.
Yeah, so either you do word by word or you give a stage direction. Yeah, you know, it's not fun. Chalitzas are almost never happy to, like, it's pretty bad because it's usually a young person dying without children, right? Sometimes it's an old person who just never had children, but it's usually a young, you know, it's like someone who dies in, you know, as a soldier or something, and you know, it's always really bad. You know, I mean, I've had friends who've had to do chalitza. It's really not a good situation. But it means that, you know, a young person died, and then their brothers have to do. I mean, it's terrible. Okay, so I think that you could definitely draw this type of distinction, at least for some of them. But there are a few here that are a little bit weird. And I would pick, let's start with two that I think are pretty strange here. Shema and Shmoneh Esrei. Shema is quite shocking. Right? How many of you had to guess whether Shema goes in the list of ritual or in the list of things that are about communication, would have put it in the list of ritual? Right? I would have put it in the list of ritual. What about Shmona Esrei? What about the Amidah? Where would you have put it? Ritual or communication? Okay, so...
communication.
Oh, okay. Well, you're right. In the end, it's communication. So let's skip for a moment to Daf Lamed Gimel. The Gemara seems to tell you straight, why is it that Shmona Esrei can be in any language? What does the Gemara say? Tvila, right? Tav of Lamed Gimel Amar Aleph. Rachmehi. Golheicha Deboi Masli. It's mercy. It's supplication. So however you want to communicate, communicate. The Gemara is about as explicit as it can be. The reason Shmona Esrei can be in any language is because it's meant to communicate. Then the Gemara challenges it and says, really, is that true? Amar Rav Yehuda lo'olam al yishal adam tzrachav lashon aramit. Amar Rav Yochanan kol shos tzrachav lashon aramit. Ein malachei asharet nizkakin lo. Lefi she'ein malachei asharet makirin b'lashon aramit. Don't daven in Aramaic because the angels don't know Aramaic. The Gemara says, lokash ab yachid ab tzibur. It depends on whether you're a yachid or a tzibur. I'll come back to what that means in a minute. Okay? But at least the initial claim of the Gemara is that Shmona Esrei, you might have thought it's ritual, but it's not. It's communication. Not like Rami said, communication between people. It's communication to God. But it's still fundamentally not a ritual act. It's an act of communication. And therefore can be in any language. Okay. What about Shema? What about Shema? What does the Gemara say by Shema to support its position?
Well, actually, I don't know. I would say that it's hard to support the Shema position because isn't, like, Shema, like, part of your daily obligation to learn Torah? Like, so, like, it should be the actual text.
Oh, okay. So Shema is the interesting one, right? Shema, on the one hand, you might say, isn't it, you know, formal. I have an obligation to say these words. On the other hand, you might say, I don't know, you know, maybe not. Maybe it's about the content of what you're saying, or for those of you who came to Tefillah, right, it could be that these words don't matter at all, right? It could be that you're obligated to say something every day, but not necessarily these words, which would go in that direction. Tellingly, Shema is the one where you have machloket. Right? And what's the machloket? The Gemara says, Kriyat Shema Minolan, on Lamed Bet, Amed Bet, Tichtiv, Shema Yisrael, Bechol HaShon, Shata Shomeya. So the position of our Mishnah records the Tanakama, who says, Shema is about hearing what this means. Bechol HaShon, Shata Shomeya. And who disagrees? Rebbe. Right, Rebbe, and he says, no, Bava Yasam, right? V'hayu, Hadvarim Eila, these words. Bava Yatan. So Shema, interestingly, gets a machloket. Because on the one hand, you could look at Shema as being about the content of what you're saying. It's an affirmation of faith, in which case it's more about the content. But you could also look at it as a formal statement of faith, in which case it's ritualized. At the end of the day, that seems to be the machloket, Rabbi Yehuda, Rebbe, and the Chachamim. The Chachamim say, Shema, listen, whatever you understand. It's about the content. And Rebbe says, V'hayu, Hadvarim, Ha'ela, these words. Bava Yatanyu, exactly, these words, as is. Yes, Adam.
Can you also say that the idea of divine could be the idea of, like, divine, not necessarily words, but these things?
Yes. Yes, you definitely could. He reads it more from the words vihayu, but you're right. It's not even clear, and this is what we talked about a lot in our Shema, in our Tefillah class, is that it's not clear what the words Dvarim here mean. Do they mean the words of Shema? Do they mean the words of Torah? Do they mean specific words? Yeah, it's really not clear what that means, and that might be part of the ambiguity. But as a general rule, I think that this is a fair interpretation of the sugya, is that the things that are about communication can be in any language. The things that are ritualized have to be in Hebrew. And certain things which are unclear whether they are ritual or about communication, you have a machloket. Yes, Adam.
How did he get it from
V'hayu? And this shall be. Right? V'hayu hadvarim eila, these words as they are. V'hayu, they shall be. That's how we, v'havayatam yehu. As they are, they should be. That's how he reads it. I don't know how compelling it is, but that is drasha. Now, I'm just going to, for a moment, talk about the tefillah one. Let me bracket the tefillah issue. For tefillah, the Gemara ends up saying that it depends on yachid versus tzibor. So what does that mean? So as I mentioned briefly, there are several dead and rishonim. The Rif says as follows. The Rif says that it depends on whether you're actually in a tzibur or not, and there are two ways of understanding what the Rif means. One way of understanding the Rif is only Chazar Hashat itself, which is Tfilat HaTzibur, can be in another language, but your private Shemona Esrei can never, even when you're in shul, be in a foreign language, or the way most people understand the Rif, which is as long as you're davening in the tzibur, then even your private Shemona Esrei can be in any language. That's the Rif. The second position is Rabbeinu Yonah, which is any tefillah that the tzibur says, right, which is a formula of tefillah that everyone says, i.e. Shmona Esrei, can be said in any language, but your private prayers cannot be. Now, I'm sure this is a shocking position to you, right? Because you probably all grew up people saying, well, in addition to davening and shul, whenever you want something, you should turn to God. The answer is, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, absolutely not. You're not allowed to do that. It is usur. Right? Shmona Esrei, you can say in another language. But if you want to do well on a test, you have a sick relative, and you want to say, please God help, you must do that in proper Lashon HaKodesh with proper grammar, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, or it is usur, right? Which is, I know, not how you all learned, but that's Rabbeinu Yonah. And by the way, that's also the Rif, right? Both the Rif and Rabbeinu Yonah think that if you have a private thing that you want to ask God, don't you dare, under any circumstances, say it in English, or even in modern Hebrew. It had better be in Lashon HaKodesh. Why were none of you taught what I just said? Because most people posting like the third day, which is the rush, which is no. You're allowed to daven whenever you want in any language, as long as it's not Aramaic. The only thing that you're limited to tzibur is Aramaic tefillah. But any language which is not Aramaic, you can do whatever you want. But just understand that even though that may be how we posken, that's actually a minority position in Rishonim. It is a minority position in Rishonim. Most Rishonim think that If you're not saying Shmoneh Esrei or not in the Tzibur, you must daven B'Lashon HaKodesh with proper grammar. And according to the Rambam, not only that, Lashon HaKodesh, proper grammar, starting with Shevach, then Bakasha, then Hoda'ah. Biblically, you must do that. By, yes. Yes, Adam.
I think Ezra had his hand up before.
Okay, Ezra.
Why is it us here that is just saying it doesn't work?
You could say it doesn't work if you want, sure. I don't know, Usher. It is not, or it doesn't work, fine. I don't know. But, I don't know which one I would say. But you can't do that, right? It doesn't, it's not a good tefillah, okay? Well, I'll leave the ambiguity. Yes, Adam. Yeah, so that might be true, right? That would be true even according to Rabbeinu Yonah, right? Because if you're in shul or you're in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei, it might work, right? But like you're right, that already is more makil because then you're in the territory where the Rif and Rabbeinu Yonah might agree because you're dealing with Shmoneh Esrei and maybe you're dealing when you're in shul, right? And things like that. Again, I'm not telling you not to paskin like the Rush. Right? The majority position is like, the majority of poskim nowadays will poskim like the Rush and say, you're always allowed to daven in any language as long as it's not Aramaic. And since I know you guys don't know Aramaic well enough to formulate a tefillah in Aramaic, I'm not so worried about it. In a chanami. But you should know that it's actually a big chiddush that we poskim like the Rush because it's really the minority position in Rishonim. Right? The majority of Rishonim think it's not true. They think you have to daven B'Lashon HaKodesh unless you're either in a tzibur or davening Shmoneh Esrei. Okay, but yes, I mean, but again, I think the majority of people possibly rush, but last year I gave a whole shiur on how this is really the minority position we've shown him, and what that tells us about tefillah, not for right now. Okay, so close parentheses. Now, I want to push it just a little bit farther. Yes, Adam?
Sorry.
No problem. According to, so according to Rabbeinu Yonah and the Rif, it's no Shaila. If you're not Mitzibur, you have no choice. It has to be Lashon HaKodesh. Right? According to Rush, we could debate that. Right? The Sefer Chassidim, which is quoted in the Mishnah Berurah, would tell you, no, not only can you do it in a different language, but you should. But probably not in Aramaic. You're right. Probably not in Aramaic. The answer would be, if it's Aramaic, then do it in Hebrew. Unless you're in Tzibur, and then maybe you can get away with it. But in Yachid, then even the Rush would say you can't do it.
Okay. So I know a couple of people who come from families where they spoke a language called the Shantidan. It's basically Aramaic.
Yeah. So those people would have trouble.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Agreed.
Yeah. I
don't know. Most of the poskim don't deal with it because, like, most people didn't speak Aramaic, but I don't know, honestly. Okay. But let's try to push this a little bit farther here. Because Tosfot makes an interesting point. And Tosfot says, what does Tosfot say? Tosfot says, what does the first Tosfot say in on the seventh Perek? You guys get to Tosfot?
Wait, we got to the first one that you asked, or?
Yeah, so what does Tosfot say?
That it just has to be something you understand, right?
Unless what?
Unless, I don't know. I don't remember reading
it. But the Tosfot says, it sounds like,
yeah, it sounds like it means any language, but only language you
actually
understand.
Right, meaning he wants to, he's not sure the Gemara means this, but he thinks that it has to be something that you understand. Okay.
So what
say it again?
Wasn't his version of the mission indifferent?
Slightly.
Like, his version of the mission implied that it was, like, your language opposed to
anyone. Yeah. Now, right, he thinks it should be your language, so he says the mission doesn't sound that way. But most poskim assume that he's right. However, most poskim say, they draw a distinction, and they say it depends. Tosfot is right if it's not Loshon HaKodesh. But most people assume the following. That if you're doing it in any foreign language, meaning not Lashon HaKodesh, you need to understand it. But if it's in Lashon HaKodesh, then you are Yotzei even if you don't understand. Why would that be the case? Yes, Rami. Okay, so Rami wants to say, well, Hebrew has special privileges. Okay, let's push that farther. Ezra, yeah?
So, like, Lashon HaKodesh is the only language that, like, the words, like, have any actual status beyond, like, the intent.
Good.
So, with other language, if you don't have the proper intent, just, like, same thing as English, because, like, English doesn't have any proper status, the words of English don't mean anything unless you put meaning behind them.
Good.
But if you just see the words of Lashon HaKodesh, they have their default meaning, which has an actual status without your intent.
Very good. So, what Ezra suggests, which I think is 100% right, is that maybe we have to be more careful and to say the following. There are two types of language. There's intrinsic language, meaning language that inherently has value and meaning, and then there's language which only has meaning insofar as it is communicative. Lashon HaKodesh in Halacha has intrinsic meaning, and therefore even if you don't understand it, you fulfill the mitzvah. That's why... Right? And its intrinsic meaning has two implications. One is that ritualized law must be done in the magic language, as Ezra calls it. But the second implication is that even communicative mitzvot, if done b'lashon HaKodesh, right, are valuable because they have intrinsic meaning. But foreign languages, A, they only work when the issue at hand is communicative, but because they're, and that's because since those mitzvot are communicative, they don't need intrinsic language. They need language that communicates. But subjective language, or language that has subjective meaning, only has meaning if you understand it. And therefore, those things which have foreign languages work, but only if you understand them. Very good. I think that's 100% right. And with it, I want to point this out from Iran, okay? So the Iran has the following claim. Did you guys get to as far as Nedarim? Rami, I saw your hand, but
yes?
Yes. Okay. So the Mishnah Nedarim tells you that there are different ways to take a Nedar. One is a regular neder, one's called a tinoi, and the third way is called a yad. Okay? The Gemara has a machloket on daf yud. What is tinoi nedarim? Right? One is a tinoi neder. So you have a machloket, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. What do they say? What's the machloket? Yeah, what's the machloket? What is a kinui neder?
One's like lashon nachrim.
Do you have a machloket? What are the two possibilities? Lashon Nachrem and Lashon Shebadu Chachamim. Right? Foreign language or the language made up by the rabbis. Okay? So, what do you think? If you take a neder, Bilashon Shebadu Chachamim, is that biblical, biblically binding, or rabbinically binding? What do you think? Right, if you take a neder in a language that's made up by the rabbis, is it biblically binding or rabbinically binding? What do you think? So Ezra says rabbinically, like Rabbeinu Tam. Tosfos says rabbinically. But what does the Ran say? The Ran, okay, if you guys didn't get to the Ran, so now let's read it together. The Ran says it's biblically. And he says why?
Because it can be done in any language.
He says, V'afilu l'reish lakish nami. Even according to Reish Lakish. The Amar Shehem Lashon Shebadu Lahem Chachamim, who say that Kinoi means language that was made up by the rabbis. Harehim gamken kineder gamur mid oraita. It's still a biblically binding vow. Shaharei kol halishonot, because all languages einon ela haskamot ota uma. It's just convention agreed to by people. V'lo gar'a haskamat chachamim zal mehaskamatam. And it doesn't matter who made them up. It doesn't matter if the people made it up and agreed that that's how they can communicate, or the rabbis made it up, but you understand what they mean. Hilka havolehu midoraita. And the Ran makes this fascinating claim, and he says, language is merely that which is used to communicate. That's all it is. That's what language is. And therefore, it doesn't matter how you got to the point that people understand it. Once they understand it, it is language. Because it communicates. Right? That's it. There is no intrinsic meaning to language. Language is that which people communicate with. And once it is recognized, people understand it, it is a language. But what I would suggest in light of the Ran is going back to Ezra's point, is that that's true of every language except for Lashon HaKodesh. Right? Every language is just meaningful insofar as it communicates, except for Lashon HaKodesh, which is intrinsically meaningful. And therefore, what I think that comes out to la halacha is the following, and this is basically the framing for the seventh perek. Things which are ritual need to be said in the intrinsic language. Let me just finish my thought, okay? I know you have a guest speaker, so let me finish quickly, right? Things that are Lashon HaKodesh need to be in the intrinsic language. Things that are about communication need to be in some, can be in any way that you communicate and understand. But there, Tosef says, if it's a language which is not Hebrew, so then you need to understand it, because what gives it its value is that people understand it. If you don't understand it, then you can say it in Lashon HaKodesh, because it still has intrinsic value. Okay, that's what I have to say. I see that you're all running to the guest speaker, so let's leave it there. That is a basic introduction to the seventh perek, and the halachot of language. This is really early to start a guest speaker, but...